2,430 games in the books, 30 episodes of this podcast in the books, and it is episode 31 of 3U3D. We have cut it down to 10 teams going to the postseason, and my baseball roundtable associates are chomping at the bit to break it down for you, the postseason, the MVP awards. We've got everything coming at you right now on 3 Up, 3 Down. Let me introduce my baseball roundtable associates once again for this week, starting off with the severely disappointed Brian Boynton.
Yeah, I'm crying inside.
Going over to the not-so-disappointed Angela Felicia. Angela, congratulations on making the playoffs.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
Going to go over to the National League side. Kurt Peter, made a good run at it with your Brewers. How are you feeling?
Feeling good. I mean, 2013 is looking bright.
Definitely is. Gene Segura looking good. Carlos Gomez.
Carlos Gomez. 20 home runs, 19 home runs this year? I'll take it.
That's good. I like him. And, Jeremy, you almost pulled it off. It was sad to hear Vin Scully calling that game last night as the Dodgers did not make the playoffs. How are you holding up? At least you have the Athletics.
At least I have the Athletics. And good thing Vin's coming back for another season.
There you go. And speaking of the Athletics, that is where we are going to start it tonight. The most surprising comeback in the history of Major League Baseball, potentially. Oakland was 13 games back on June 30th. They were 5 games back with 9 to play. And they come back, defeat the Texas Rangers, sweep the Texas Rangers in 3 games to end the season. They are in first place, winning the AL West in first place for only today by themselves. And they will be the AL West champions going to the playoffs. Guys, how big of a surprise was this? I remember seeing on Twitter today the Las Vegas Hilton sportsbook manager had posted that the A's were 100-1 to win the division at the All-Star break. This was a complete surprise. Brian, it's the Rangers that collapsed, but do you take a little solace that they're still going to the playoffs and have a chance to right these wrongs if they can come together in the postseason?
There is a little solace in that. I'm very disappointed in the fact that they lost it. Like you said, they had a 5-game lead with 9 games to go, and all they had to do was win 2 out of the last 6 games and couldn't do it. So that's very disappointing. But we do get the Orioles at home in Arlington, where this season we have beaten the Orioles pretty handily for the most part. So I do feel very confident in that. Plus, if we win Friday, winning the division really doesn't really mean anything because we go to the ALDS, so it's all for naught.
That game will be the primetime game on Friday, 8:37, Baltimore Orioles at the Texas Rangers. Texas will throw Yu Darvish. Winner goes to face the New York Yankees in the ALDS. But let's get back to the A's here. Jeremy, they're your American League team. You're from nearby Walnut Creek next to Oakland. What happened here? They're starting rookies left and right. They end up with the best record in baseball since June 30th. Is Billy Beane just a genius and we just need to bow down and understand what he's doing here with the lowest payroll in baseball?
Well, I wish I could explain it. It seems to happen every few years. You know, you just start to doubt that Billy Beane can actually pull it off. You know, they sit hovering around that $50 million payroll. Then a year like this happens where not only do they, you know, surprise people. I personally thought they were going to lose 100 games. I said it in public multiple times, and here they are, you know, winning closer to winning 100 than losing 100. And, yeah, I honestly don't know how to explain it. The things like this just prove that Billy Beane is still the best executive in the game. You just got to hope that, you know, for his sake, they finally bring it all home, you know?
All right. We all had the over-under for the Oakland Athletics was 73. Before the season, we all picked over-under. KP, high fives to you and me for taking the over there.
Of course. Moneyball.
Boom. That's how we do it. That's how we do it right there. But unfortunately, none of us nailed the Orioles over except for Angelo.
That's
two
right.
The two playoff surprises. And we went 3-10 combined on picking the correct one. It's okay, though. That's why there's surprises. That's why there's Cinderellas. Oakland will head to the ALDS and take on the AL Central champion Detroit Tigers, which segues perfectly to our next topic. Miguel Cabrera leads the Detroit Tigers to the playoffs as the AL Central champions, and along the way, he decides, I'm gonna go for the triple crown. 330 batting average, 44 home runs, 139 RBIs, the first triple crown since Carl Yastrzemski in 1967, the first triple crown by a right-handed batter since 1996. That was Frank Robinson. Angelo, how excited are you for Miguel Cabrera to get this achievement, leading the Tigers to the postseason?
Oh, I am tremendously excited. I don't think words can really explain it yet. It's just still too fresh. Something that, you know, none of us young baseball fans have experienced in our lifetime yet. None of us really know the true meaning, I think, behind the Triple Crown, except for just what it stands for in those three categories and leading the way. I mean, I was thinking about it today while all this baseball was unfolding today and just thinking that, you know, how lucky, I am to have been to, you know, so many games this year and watched Miguel play, and I keep always saying how I want to see a no-hitter and I want to see a perfect game, but there's only been, you know, 10 players individually to ever win the Triple Crown. That's a great feat in itself and something that I'll never forget, at least from a fan standpoint. But he is by far just right now just the best hitter in the game. He does it all. It's a line to line, hits for power, hits for average. Obviously, I don't need to really say that, but to hit 44 home runs in Comerica Park, I just think how many home runs he would hit in a place like Yankee Stadium. Even though the power alley isn't right, he still hits home runs that way. And the park's very, very big in Comerica, so you know, who knows what it would be in a different stadium.
But is Miguel Cabrera the American League MVP? Tonight was the first presidential debate between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. So we're going to have ourselves a 3U3D debate on the American League MVP. Now, myself and Jeremy are on Team Trout for AL MVP. Angelo, obviously, and KP are on Team Cabrera for AL MVP. And Brian is our undecided voter who will decide after the debate the 3U3D American League MVP. We will defer to KP and let him have the first word. Why is Miguel Cabrera the American League MVP?
Coming to me first, huh? Well, one, yes, he won the Triple Crown. Hasn't been done since 1967. That's 45 years. I mean, when you look at the stats and break it down, Trout has a lot more numbers in, like, his 8 triples. Miguel Cabrera has 0. You don't expect Miguel Cabrera to have any triples. He's a big guy. He hits home runs. He hit that many home runs in Detroit, which is not easy to do. He drove in that many runs. I mean, he had a good offense behind him. So did Mike Trout. I mean, he's got a bunch of guys around him, and he leads off. I just think that playing in Detroit and putting up those numbers, he showed why he was, like, valuable to his team. He brought him to the playoffs. Mike Trout came on, and, yeah, he changed the dynamic of the Angels, but he certainly didn't, like, change the whole then. I mean, he was ridiculous, yes, but he also had 42 more strikeouts than Miguel Cabrera. I mean, I think if Mike Trout were the MVP, the Angels would be in the playoffs. I mean, plain and simple. They have enough star power that adding Mike Trout should have pushed them into the playoffs.
Rebuttal. You guys keep bringing up Comerica Park, hitting 44 homers in Comerica Park. Comerica Park, the 9th best ballpark to hit in this season, according to Park Factor. Angel Stadium of Anaheim, 27th. So I will contend Mike Trout hitting in a much more difficult ballpark. Jeremy, your first word, why is Mike Trout the American League MVP?
Thank you, Mapes. Good points, KP, but I will have to disagree, obviously. You know, you can talk all you want about the power numbers and Triple Crown, you know, huge accomplishment. First time we've seen it in our lifetimes, possibly the last time we'll see it. You never know with the way things are played these days. But, and I know some people out there do not appreciate the stat that is WAR, but it really does take into account a lot of factors that determine a player's value. Whether or not you like the stat itself, it is a way to measure how much a player is worth to their respective team. And with that, Trout's WAR is almost a full 4 points above Cabrera, which doesn't mean, you know, he's 1.5 or 2 times better than Cabrera or anything like that, but the fact of the matter is when we're talking most valuable player, it doesn't matter if they made it to the playoffs. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, Tigers deserve it. They should be in the playoffs. Cabrera is a huge part of that. They also had one less win than the Angels did this season. So, yeah, they played in an easier division. There's a lot of factors that go into a team's record, and, you know, they're arguably the weakest team of the AL as far as record goes going into the playoffs right now. The Angels, by record, had a better season. And another thing is that once they brought Trout up, you know, they were, what, 9 or 10 games back when he was called up. Since then, they've had the best record in the majors. So that in itself proves how valuable Trout really was to that team.
Angelo, over to you. Your rebuttal on that, and why is Miguel Cabrera the MVP?
Well, not bad points, Jeremy, but we're bringing up this WAR stat now that is new for baseball, and everyone's starting to fall in love with it. And, yeah, it does show the metrics to how valuable that player is in comparison to a replacement player in AAA or AA. But I want to point out that, yeah, Tigers did make the playoffs, and it's a team sport, and it's not an individual sport. And the Angels didn't make the playoffs. But Mike Trout has to account for some of that. If he's going to be their MVP and the league's MVP, he's got to lead his team into the playoffs. Every time the game was on the line in Detroit, Miguel stepped up. Miguel didn't just win the Triple Crown over the course of the year. His second half numbers blew everybody away. Not only that, but so did his seventh inning or later numbers. And I have stats that back those up, too. In the second half of the season, Miguel hit 25 home runs, batted .327 with a .401 on-base percentage and 65 RBIs. That's to Trout's 18 home runs, batting .302, .394 on-base percentage and 40 RBIs. In the seventh inning or later, when the game's on the line, Cabrera has 17 home runs, batting .330, on-base percentage of .405 with 45 RBIs, and Trout has 8 home runs, batting .260. I mean, come on, .260? That's not very clutch. On-base percentage of .371 and 18 RBIs. And not to mention his numbers with runners on, too. Miguel Cabrera just destroys him there as well. I think just far on above, Miguel Cabrera just deserves to be the MVP this year. He just, I get the speed that Trout brings with the stolen bases, and no one can argue that Miguel Cabrera is going to steal bases better than Mike Trout. But part of Mike Trout's average goes up because he can beat out an infield single, and Miguel Cabrera won't. His hits are actual hits.
His hits are actual hits, except for the 30 home runs Mike Trout hit. He hit 30 home runs still. That's getting overlooked. I love Miguel Cabrera. Miguel Cabrera is one of my favorite players. He's the best hitter in the game, in my opinion. But Mike Trout is the MVP. There have been 10 Triple Crowns in Major League Baseball history. There have been 7 American Leagues. There has never been an American League season in which a player hit 30 home runs and had 49 stolen bases. Excuse me. There has never been a season in Major League Baseball history in which a player had 30 home runs, 45 stolen bases, and 125 runs scored. Miguel Cabrera is doing things other people have done. Mike Trout is doing things nobody has ever done in the history of the game. When he came up, he led the Angels to the best record in Major League Baseball since he got called up. He has been a defensive wonderkin. He has robbed 5 home runs. He is going to win a Gold Glove while Miguel Cabrera's defense is average at best at third base. And that doesn't get factored in here unless you look at WAR. And even if you take out the defense, Mike Trout's offensive war is better than Miguel Cabrera's. It's not my fault. It's not Mike Trout's fault that Miguel Cabrera gets to play 54 games against the 72-win Kansas City Royals, the 68-win Cleveland Indians, and the 66-win Minnesota Twins, while Mike Trout has to play 54 games against the 94-win Athletics, the 93-win Texas Rangers, and the 75-win Seattle Mariners. The last-place team in the AL West would have been third place in the AL Central. The Angels would have ran away with the AL Central. I leave you with this. The Vegas over-unders that we will get to later. The Angels were over-under was 89.5. They finished at 89. The Detroit over-under was 94, and they finished at 88. So maybe actually the Tigers, even with a triple crown, Miguel Cabrera, underachieved. KP, going to give you a chance to rebuttal on why you still think Miguel Cabrera is the AL MVP.
I mean, those are all good. I mean, it's hard to decide. Mike Trout has done things that people haven't done in a shortened season. I mean, I don't know why the Angels didn't bring Mike Trout up earlier if he's this good. But I also, to counteract the park factors, those are all factored on this season. Cabrera, Fielder, I mean, they all hit home runs, so that goes way up. I don't think I don't know what the totals are for the Angels home runs this, like, year comparatively, but hitting big bombs also helps those go way up for the year. I mean, yeah, it's really a horse apiece. It depends on what you value. Do you value, like, historic, like, power numbers, home runs, RBIs, average, or do you value first-time things ever happening? I mean, he's a young guy. That might discourage people from voting for him because, I mean, if you don't think Mike Trout's going to have another shot at winning an AL MVP, I think you're crazy. I don't know how many more shots that Miguel Cabrera is going to have. I know that's probably not a good basis for doing things, but, I mean, it's fact.
Jeremy, going to go over to you. Last word for Team Trout on why Trout is the MVP.
Well, I don't think his age has any bearing on it. In fact, it probably makes it even more impressive that he was able to do these things in his first full season at age 20/21. And yeah, Miguel Cabrera, you know, he's 29. He's still in his prime. He is going to have another shot because he's in the MVP conversation every single season unless he gets injured. They're both going to have their shots. You know, they'll probably, assuming they both stay in the American League against each other, they're probably both going to have, you know, huge years almost every single year, and they're probably both going to be in the MVP conversation. But the fact of the matter is that we're talking about this season, and like you were saying, KP, it depends on what you value. Well, I think when you talk about what the most valuable player in baseball is, it's someone that provides not only value, you know, by driving people in and hitting home runs, but by stealing bases, you know, taking the next base, playing fundamentally sound defense, robbing home runs, all these stuff that, you know, not only did Trout produce runs with his bat, but he did it with his feet, and he saved them with his gloves, and those last two things are something that Miguel Cabrera cannot say that he did.
Still strange enough, Miguel Cabrera has never started an All-Star game. That is a Travis Shumakery. Hopefully he'll be starting next year's All-Star game with the Triple Crown under his resume. Angelo, before we get to Brian's decision, I'll give you the last word. It's your guy. Anything you want, 15 seconds. Last word.
Yeah, Brian, you keep mentioning that Mike Trout has 30 home runs, which Miguel hit 50% more of by hitting 44. Well, just slightly under 50%. I understand Mike Trout's a great player, but you know he's supposed to score runs. He's a leadoff hitter. He's supposed to steal bases. He's a leadoff hitter. That's what he's built to do. The fact that he hit 30 home runs, that is pretty impressive. I'm not going to lie about that. That's pretty much all we've got going for him though right now. His defense is good, but I could name you a few other center fielders that I wouldn't mind having if I didn't have Mike Trout.
All right. It's interesting. It's weird dealing with these two players that are apples and oranges. One's a leadoff player. One's a middle of the order player. Both great players. Brian, you've heard the debate. You're the deciding factor to decide the 3U3D AL MVP for 2012. What is your decision?
Well, everybody made solid points across the board. I give y'all credit on that. There's just one thing y'all left out, consistency. Miguel Cabrera every month, starting in April, 298, 331, 311, 344, 357, 308. Let me give you Mike Trout's numbers, batting average per month. 091, 324, 372, 392, 284, 257. Y'all left out the consistent factor in that. Miguel Cabrera was hitting at the end of the season. Trout wasn't. He hit a lot in the middle of the season. Miguel Cabrera consistently hit all year. Now, it is an extremely, it's very hard to do. Mike Trout's a much more versatile player. He can hit home runs. He can steal bases. He's a great defender. Miguel Cabrera is at a premium position at third base. He did hit 44 home runs at Comerica. Yes, I know y'all was talking about the park factor, but like Angelo said, when you have, or maybe it's KP, when you have Cabrera, you have Fielder, those guys are hitting 30-plus home runs, that lowers the park factor. So obviously I'm going to pick Miguel Cabrera on this simply because he did win the Triple Crown. He was a more consistent player throughout the whole season.
Boo this man. Boo you. Boo you, Angelo. Boo you, KP. I can't believe this is happening. I feel like I don't even know. I'm so disappointed.
That's a good choice. Good
so
choice. Make a choice, buddy.
Dear God, did you guys pay him off?
No, I would never pay a Rangers fan off.
Well, what's my fandom have anything to do with that?
There's nothing to do with it. Has
so
everything
biased.
To do with it.
Because you hate Mike Trout. You hate
no, it's got nothing to do with it. I
hate him so much.
No, I hate him because he's an Angel, but as a player, I respect the hell out of him because he's an awesome player, but he just didn't have the consistency in my mind to win.
I hope you lose to Baltimore for this.
Wow, thanks, man.
I'm just kidding. I don't want to see you sad. I don't want to see you sad, but it's all right. It looks like Miguel Cabrera is the official 3U3D AL MVP for 2012, much to my chagrin. We'll have our full ballots on the blog 3U3D.mlblogs.com tomorrow with our top 10 and our overall vote for American League MVP and also National League MVP, where it is a four-way race between Buster Posey, Andrew McCutchen, Ryan Braun, and Yadier Molina of the St. Louis Cardinals. A lot of ways to go on this. We won't do it debate style. We'll just have each one say who is their NL MVP, and we will start it off with Jeremy.
Oh, man. These races this year are absolutely killing me. I mean, both Cy Young races, the MVP debate we just had, still a little heated on that. But yeah, I mean, it honestly seems like almost every single race besides the AL Rookie of the Year is extremely close. And when you just look at, you know, the numbers that the four guys in the NL you just mentioned put up, Posey, McCutchen, Braun, and Molina, it's insanely hard to choose. And, you know, I hate to say this as a Dodger fan, but just looking at it and having to make a decision right now, I think Posey has a very, very slight edge over the other three. You know, you can't really discount what Yadier Molina brings to the Cardinals and the defense he brings. I mean, he's the best defensive catcher in baseball. There's no question. And then you've got Braun putting up ungodly numbers again, although his team did not make the playoffs this year. And McCutchen, of course, you know, just absolutely carried that Pirates team on his back. They didn't have much besides him. And until the very end of the year when they started fading, I mean, he was the guy. He was the no-doubt pick for me for a while. But I think the fact that the Giants ran away with the division and Buster Posey was kind of the jumping-off point for the middle of the out of order, even after Melky Cabrera went down. Plus, he plays a good catcher. You know, it's painful to say, but I think a Giant will be taking the NL MVP this year.
Very, very interesting. Going to go over to KP, the other National League guy. Who is your NL MVP? Should we get a little home cooking here?
I mean, it's clearly Ryan Braun. I don't know what the argument is about. McCutchen, yeah, he started off really hot, and I don't think he's closed. I mean, if you lead your team to another losing season, that certainly doesn't bode well for your resume. I mean, hooray, the Pirates are below 81 wins again. It's not a shock to anyone, I don't think. Meanwhile, Ryan Braun put up 41 home runs. He's the only player in the National League to have over 100 runs and 100 RBIs. He's got 30 stolen bases. I mean, one, that's a huge facet. I mean, what does Posey bring in stolen bases? What does Yadier Molina bring in stolen bases? I don't think he even threw out 30 people this year, either of them. Ryan Braun's third in average, so if you're a big average stickler, you can look at that. I mean, his slugging only behind Giancarlo Stanton. His OPS is first in the league. He was going back to consistency. He was every month he was consistent, 294 in April, 323 in May, 319 in June, 301 July, 312 in August, with 22 RBIs the last month and 8 home runs. I mean, you can't knock that. He leads in everything. I know that people are saying, oh, well, catcher is such a tough position, and everyone's saying that, but one, Posey didn't play catcher all year. He played first for a good deal of games. Yadier Molina isn't hardly anywhere on these leaderboards in the top 10 and like nothing pretty much. So I don't know why he's even considered. And then I don't think McCutchen should be considered either because he has an average and that's about it.
All right, Angelo, over to you. You got your player as the American League MVP. Who is your National League MVP?
I'm going to go with Buster Posey on this one. I'm just going to give you a couple quick stats, and this is just why I think Buster Posey is the winner for this. He's the second catcher in the last 70 years to win a batting title, and he's the first National League catcher in 100 years to win on-base percentage statistic. So those two alone right there. Plus, guys, I mean, come on. He won the NL WAR stat, too.
The imaginary WAR stat.
Oh, now the WAR stat's fine. Ah, oh, all right. Well, fine. Brian, going to go over to you. Who is your National League MVP?
Well, I have to side with KP on this one, solely for the one fact that Ryan Braun was under such scrutiny this year, and his power numbers are actually better this year than they were last year when he was got tested positive for PEDs and it proved he didn't because he's been tested all year this year more than likely, and his numbers are better this year than they were last year. So how can you not go with him? And he doesn't have Prince Fielder hitting with him in the lineup. So it's got to be Ryan Braun. He's the only offensive force they have in that lineup. He's not the only offensive force. He's the only holdover offensive force from last year that they had in the lineup.
I've gone so back and forth on this between all three guys. I have Yadi fourth as well as he has done this season. A great player for the Cardinals, leading them to the playoffs, basically taking the spot of Pujols in that offense, being the clutch guy. But I'm gonna go with Buster Posey. He ends up leading the National League in batting average based on Melky Cabrera's suspension and him removing himself from that lineup. He gets 100 RBIs, 24 home runs in a very pitcher-friendly park at AT&T Park. I know he split time between catcher and first base coming back from that injury, but he also led the league in OPS plus at 173, which takes into effect ballpark factor, pitchers that he faced and everything. That stat to me helps prove that he was the best player in the National League this year, but he might not be the official 3U3D NL MVP. It is 3-2 on first place votes, but we'll see what the full ballots do on 3U3D.mlblogs tomorrow, and you can go over there to see who officially ends up as the National League MVP in our opinion. That'll do it for the MVP talk. Gonna go over to some other news now. A few players announced their retirement for the end of the season. Omar Vizquel of the Blue Jays, Ben Sheets of the Braves, and possibly Lance Berkman of the St. Louis Cardinals all had their last games today. We all love Omar Vizquel, Gold Glove shortstop, over 2,700 hits in his career, Do you guys think that Omar Vizquel is a Hall of Famer? We'll start it off with Brian.
Great player, yes. Hall of Famer, no. I think the Hall of Fame's been kind of watered down. And I think it was Reggie Jackson, I'm sorry, who had said that a lot of the players that are getting voted in lately wouldn't have been voted in when he was playing. Granted, it's Reggie Jackson, so you got to kind of take that into consideration when he says something outlandish like that. But I got to kind of agree with him. I think some of these players are getting in when they shouldn't be. He doesn't have the traditional numbers. He didn't have the 3,000 hits. Yes, he was a phenomenal fielder, but he just wasn't an offensive force, and you have to be get in the Hall of Fame. In my mind, you have to be a complete player in every facet of the game.
Angelo, over to you. Your thoughts on Omar Vizquel as a potential Hall of Famer.
Yeah, Brian, I kind of agree with you. I mean, he had a solid career defensively. He was one of the best defensive players of our young childhood. But his offensive numbers weren't really there. So if he's going to get in, it's going to be off his defense. And I won't be surprised if he doesn't get in.
Over to you, Jeremy. Your thoughts on Omar Vizquel's potential as a Hall of Famer.
Oh, it's such a tough case because I love Omar. He was one of the first guys I remember, you know, being flabbergasted at his defensive ability when I was growing up and watching baseball. But, yeah, same thing, man. It's so close. I mean, he's almost at 2,900 career hits. Obviously, he's not going to get there. He's not going to get to 3,000, which would have locked him probably. You know, insane fielder. He had like a 985 or something career fielding percentage. Always just one of those very dependable, you know, contact hitters who would make every play in the field. But I don't know if he was good enough. I mean, I agree with you guys that the Hall of Fame has been watered down a little bit, and I think it has to get a little more strict. And if that's the basis for it, then I got to go with a very close no on Vizquel.
KP, over to you. Your thoughts on Omar Vizquel as a Hall of Famer?
I don't think he will be. I think he's a great ambassador for the game. I mean, he played for as long as I've been around, I think. And he's always done it right. He's never had any problems, really. He's always played consistent baseball, and he still plays consistent baseball. But I just don't think his career is memorable enough. But I think his legacy will get remembered, but I don't think his career and his numbers are good enough for him to get in the Hall of Fame.
Would you guys like to play a fun game?
Sure.
Yes.
All right. We are going to compare these numbers. Player A has 13 gold gloves, 2,460 career hits, a .262 career batting average, a .337 career OBP, and a .666 career OPS with 28 home runs, 580 steals. Player B has 11 gold gloves at the same position, 2,876 hits, a .272 batting average, a .336 OBP, a .688 OPS, with 80 career home runs and 404 steals. Little less speed, couple fewer gold gloves, but better average, more hits, a better OPS. Player A is a Hall of Famer. Player B is Omar Vizquel. Any of you want to guess who Player A is?
Ozzie Smith.
That is correct.
Nice.
Damn.
So much for games. So much for games.
Yeah, that was easy.
Yeah. So Omar Vizquel fares very, very comparatively to Ozzie Smith. Ozzie Smith did get voted in to the All-Star game many, many, many more times than Omar Vizquel ever did, unfortunately. But if they look at the overall numbers, Omar Vizquel versus Ozzie Smith is closer than you think, and Ozzie Smith was a no-doubt Hall of Famer. Gonna go over to some injury news now. Players with the season ending are gonna get some surgeries done. Paul Konerko of the White Sox, first baseman. He was an early MVP candidate. He has bone chips in his wrist. He will get surgery, be ready for the start of next season. CJ Wilson will have surgery on his elbow. Luckily, though, not Tommy John surgery, just bone spurs in there. He will get surgery this coming week. Matt Kemp will get his shoulder checked out. That has been affecting him the last month. He went into that terrible slump, pretty much hurting the Dodgers' chances there. There will be some rumors that he might need surgery or he might need to rest it. Jeremy, what's going on with Matt Kemp and this whole situation with his shoulder?
Well, I only heard a little bit about it on Twitter after their last game ended today, and, you know, it was kind of expected. Obviously, he first thing on the list for him should be getting that thing checked out because we need him healthy for next season. Sounds like he's just going to get it checked up on by a doctor, and if it turns out that it's just, you know, something that needs to heal, it'll take a few weeks of the offseason. If it's something that requires surgery to get something actually cleaned up, could take up to 4 months, which still, you know, that sucks, but other than missing a little bit of off-season, I guess, conditioning, you know, he'll still be ready in plenty of time for spring training. So either way, he'll be fine. You know, you just hope that either way he gets it cleaned up so that the Dodgers have their number three hitter back next year.
Yeah, and the biggest injury to me, a huge revelation, came out the end of the year that R.A. Dickey was actually pitching with a torn abdominal muscle for most of the season. He will need surgery in the offseason. R.A. Dickey, one of the leading NL Cy Young candidates. We will get into that debate next week, along with all the other awards next week on the podcast over who should win. But R.A. Dickey, to me, if he was pitching with that torn abdomen for the entire season and put up those numbers, he is hands down, to me, the NL Cy Young. Going to go over to a feel-good story that happened in the majors this week. A couple of feel-good stories, actually. First off, Adam Greenberg. You may have seen him on SportsCenter. You may have seen him at the MLB Fan Cave this week. Player for the Chicago Cubs in 2005. Had one plate appearance. Got beamed in the head against the Florida Marlins. Never made it back to the majors. He's played in independent circuits for the Bridgeport Bluefish, one of my local teams. He played for Team Israel recently in the World Baseball Classic. All there was an online campaign to get him one more chance, one more at-bat in the major leagues, as he is just one of only two players to get hit by a pitch in their only plate appearance in the major leagues. The Miami Marlins sign him to a one-day contract. He ends up striking out on three pitches to the aforementioned R.A. Dickey. Not a great prize to have to face Dickey's knuckleball in your one at-bat, though. But, guys, do you like teams doing things like this for players like Adam Greenberg, who had been through so much adversity trying to get back, concussion syndrome, et cetera, et cetera? Do you like stunts like this that, for the good of the game, you think? We'll go over to KP.
I mean, it was nice and all. I didn't see, like, the overly significant aspect of it. It was like, okay, he got his at-bat. I don't know. It wasn't for me. I like the full circle, the fact that he got hit by it, and he came back, and he had his at-bat. But it was just kind of, meh.
Brian, over to you. Did you like the Adam Greenberg story?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with KP on this. It's a great story, but it's kind of just, I mean, yeah, it's great for the Marlins to do that. Granted, you notice how they only did it after their season was over. They wouldn't have done this had they been in the middle of a pennant race. But it's good for them. They needed all the good publicity they could get after this dismal season they have and having Ozzie Guillen as a manager. So it's good for them, and it's good for baseball. So I like it a little bit.
Angelo, over to you. What are your thoughts on Adam Greenberg's comeback?
I think it's a cool story, man. I mean, good for him to be able to come back and finally get that plate appearance that he wanted. It's unfortunate what happened with him earlier in his career, getting hit in the head. But, you know, and good for the Marlins for doing that for him. Like Brian, like you said, You know, they wouldn't have done it if they were in a pennant race, but given the fact that their season was over, they give the kid a chance and memories for a lifetime for him.
Jeremy, over to you. I know you love the Adam Greenberg story. We were texting back and forth waiting for his at-bat the other night. What are your thoughts on Greenberg's comeback?
Oh, yeah, man, I absolutely loved it. I love stuff like that, you know, especially in the second-to-last game of the season. The Marlins are in last place. There's, you know, nothing to lose. I wish they would have let him have a few at-bats. I mean, it's really cool that they got him to, you know, go up there once, live his dream, have that crazy comeback. But how unfair is that to send him up there against R.A. Dickey, potential NL Cy Young winner and owner of one of the dirtiest knuckleballs of all time? I mean, still a great moment for him, even though he struck out on three pitches. I'm sure, you know, he will remember it forever, but dang, man, give the kid a chance to even get the bat on the ball.
All right, and the other feel-good story from today, Teddy Roosevelt won the president's race at the Nationals regular season finale. He is now 1 for, I believe, 558 in winning the race. They finally let Teddy win. Number one play on SportsCenter tonight, Teddy winning the race. The Atlet Teddy Win campaign finally pays off. Take that, Abraham Lincoln. Take that, George Washington. Thomas Jefferson, go back to writing the Declaration of Independence. It's Teddy's time. Hopefully, though, there won't be much more Teddy time, as I'm hoping the Nationals will get eliminated from the playoffs by the Braves next week. The last little bit of news here, and possibly our last this week in Tommy John of the season, Yankees number one pitching prospect coming into the season, Manny Benuelos, will undergo Tommy John surgery, adding to a rather extensive list of players, Brandon Beachy, I can't even think of all the guys right now who have had to go under Tommy John surgery, but add Manny Benuelos to the list as he will be not making his Yankees debut until at least 2014 now. Gonna go over to our fantasy talk. No more 3U, 3D, 3 up, 3 down fantasy as the season, quite frankly, is over. We hope you took our advice. The 3 downs worked out quite well if you benched Irvin Santana this past week, as well as Kyle Loesch, who both got rocked in their one start this past week. Hopefully, you won your fantasy title. I know I won a couple, including one over KP. How'd you enjoy that final, KP?
I'll be honest, I wasn't really paying attention to it because that one's not for money. The other one I was in, I actually just lost. I lost it on, like, the last 3 days, and that one was for, like, $250.
Pride is more than money.
I took second. That's pretty good.
It's priceless. I beat you, but you won the freaking Miguel Cabrera thing. Whatever.
Three up, three down. It's first and 1-2 finish.
But yeah, there it is. We helped everybody. We helped ourselves, too. 1-2 finish for three up, three down. But we're going to break down our fantasy surprises and disappointments from this past season, and we're going to start it off with Angelo. Who is your fantasy surprise and disappointment from this season in your leagues?
Well, my fantasy surprise is going to be Alex Rios, and you'll see some of what I have to say about him more in the upcoming blog about AL Comeback Player of the Year. But after, as of last year, you would have thought, you know, what is Rios doing? He hit 227, 13 home runs, and 44 RBIs. And this year he came along and had a pretty nice little season. He batted over 300, which he ended up finishing at 304. He had 25 long balls, 37 doubles, and 91 RBIs. So just a huge impact from year over year. So Alex Rios is my fantasy stud in surprise. Now, as far as disappointment goes, I'm going to have to go with Ricky Romero of the Toronto Blue Jays. After last year having such a stellar year, you just thought this power lefty was going to be great for your fantasy team this year. But here's a couple funny stats I feel. He has the worst walk-to-strikeout ratio, 105 walks to 124 strikeouts of any qualifying starter in baseball. That's the third worst ratio in the past 15 seasons among AL starters, with 100 or more strikeouts. And then he also has the highest ERA for 5.77 and highest WHIP of 1.67 of any qualifying starter in baseball.
KP, over to you. What is your fantasy surprise and disappointment from this past season?
My fantasy surprise this year is Ian Desmond for playing shortstop. I mean, in a position that struggles to get a lot of power and production out of it, he actually pretty much tore it up. I mean, he hit 25 home runs. He batted .292 this year. He leads all shortstops in both leagues with that. He stole 21 bases, which is just a nice boost. 150 hits. I mean, I think he was just when I drafted him, it was kind of like, oh, I got Ian Desmond. Oh, well. I mean, the Nationals playing well helped him. He's never hit this many home runs. He's never batted this well. I mean, he hit a lot of career highs this year, and he played in a few less games than I think he usually does. So it was just a nice boost. And my disappointment is Mr. 50-50, Matt Kemp himself. I mean, bad luck, bad something. I mean, injuries didn't help him, but when you get drafted in the top five in most fantasy leagues and you don't perform in the top five or even come close to hitting 50-50, that's going to be a disappointment.
Yeah, injuries derailed Matt Kemp this season, but Ian Desmond, on average, was the 21st shortstop off the board in average draft position. He was going 30 picks after Stephen Drew, who didn't even play the first 3 months of the season, but Ian Desmond ends up second at shortstop on the ESPN player rater, just behind Jose Reyes. So a lot of value there if you were smart enough to draft Ian Desmond late. Brian, going to go over to you. Who is your fantasy surprise and disappointment from this season?
Fantasy surprise is Minnesota's own Josh Willingham. Not many people knew about him this year because, well, he played for Minnesota. But his numbers, although he only hit .260 this season, he did have 35 home runs, 110 RBI, which isn't bad for a guy playing, again, for the Minnesota Twins. Nobody really heard about him. Played for an awful team. But his on-base percentage was a .366, slugging percentage .524, and his OPS was .890. He ended the season in only 79.8% of leagues. That's just, that guy should be in 100% of leagues, just off home run totals alone. I mean, he was, what, 10th in all of baseball in home runs. So I don't know how the guy was only in 80% of leagues. And my disappointment is, well, Roy Halladay. I never thought I'd say that because, well, he had some injuries this year, only pitched 156 in a third of an inning. But his ERA was just awful this season. His ERA was 4.49, a WHIP of 1.22, which isn't horrible. I mean, it's the worst of his career over the last, like, 6 or 7 years. But his strikeouts were low at 132. That's just not normal for him. He only had 11 wins this season. He had 36 walks. And this is the first time in, 11 years that he has not had a complete game. The only other time he did that was in 2000 when he was 23 years old. So he just, it was injuries. Maybe it's just Philly sucked this year. I don't know, but he just didn't have it this year.
Jeremy, over to you. Who is your fantasy surprise and disappointment from this season?
Well, my surprise is a guy that I was pushing so hard for my Dodgers to get at the trade deadline, but they couldn't pull the trigger. Padres wanted way too much for Chase Headley. It turns out that they didn't want too much. They wanted the exact right amount. Because this guy, I mean, if the Padres had played a little better ball altogether, he probably would have been in that MVP conversation we just had. You know, he was ranked 253rd among position players, you know, in drafts. You know, that's a guy that you take, you know, as a backup kind of insurance, maybe corner infield type of guy, just to sit on your bench and, you know, maybe play on an off day or because of injury, something like that. Well, he ended up hitting .285 with 31 homers, 113 RBIs, 16 stolen bases, and 94 runs. So that's a huge season just out of nowhere from Chase Headley. And you can bet that, you know, in the coming seasons, he'll be a little bit more of a hot commodity in fantasy drafts. You know, he really broke out onto the scene this year, and I don't expect him to really slow down. As for disappointments, man, I'm disappointed in myself because I drafted John Lester in at least half of my leagues this year. you know, thinking that he would have another awesome year being the ace of the Red Sox. I mean, naturally, the whole Boston organization let fantasy owners down this season pretty much, but, you know, Lester especially, 9-14, 4.82 ERA, 1.38 whip, only 166 strikeouts when he usually hovered in the high 190s, low 200s on a given season. He was ranked as the 60th, I believe, best overall player to take. Not sure where he was in pitchers, but, you know, he was up there. He's a guy that has produced in fantasy leagues in years past. He ended up being 875th overall, basically a complete waste of, you know, a top 8-round pick for me.
Let me go see. I will click starting pitchers. John Lester was the 13th pitcher off the board in ESPN leagues at pick number 53. And John Lester, let's see, I am through the top 50. Let's see, on the ESPN player rater, Brandon Beachy was still 51st on the player rater, and he was out the last 3 months of the year. That's amazing. He's not in the top 100, so let's go to the next page. We're now entering Travis Wood territory. John Lester was the 131st pitcher on the player rater for ESPN, just behind Jerome Williams and Cole DeFries of the Minnesota Twins. Strangely, just ahead of him is a former compadre in Boston, Josh Beckett, who is 127. John Lester, a definite disappointment. That's going to bring us over to my fantasy surprise and disappointments. I will have one for each position over on our blog, 3u3d.mlblogs.com. But my biggest surprise from this season actually led me to a fantasy title. I had in the keeper league Miguel Cabrera, who I was waiting to get third base eligibility, and in the second-to-last round of my draft, I said I need a fill-in third baseman for a week until Miguel Cabrera gets third base eligibility, and then I'll drop this guy. I never dropped him, and that was Edwin Encarnacion, who finishes the season with 42 home runs, completely not out of nowhere. He had the power potential, but he was always a disappointment. He never could put it all together. Finishes the season 42 home runs, 110 RBIs, hitting 280, and even chipped in 13 stolen bases. If you were able to grab Edwin Encarnacion late, you were doing really well. My other surprise, a player who is my AL comeback player of the year, who wasn't even drafted in any fantasy leagues. Everybody thought it was Kyle Farnsworth who was going to be the race closer. Maybe even Jake McGee. But it was Fernando Rodney who took over, finishes with 47 saves and the lowest ERA in the history of Major League Baseball at 0.60 for any pitcher with minimum of 50 innings pitched. So Fernando Rodney, if you grabbed him late, he was an absolute steal. That's why you should never really invest too much in the saves department. You could have gotten Jim Johnson and Fernando Rodney late in your drafts, and you would have had the top two closers in the American League this season. My disappointment, though, I'm not going to pick a guy who got hurt, but a guy who we expected to continue to grow in his prime. And that's Adrian Gonzalez. He still hit 300, but it was a pretty empty 300. 18 home runs this season when you were looking for 30-plus, even getting back to that 40 home run potential. He was going in the top 10 overall in fantasy drafts on average, and he finishes as the 9th-ranked first baseman on the ESPN player rater behind Paul Goldschmidt, who you could have had later. You could have had Alan Craig off of free agents, probably, who finishes just behind Adrian Gonzalez. It'll be interesting to see how much people will pay for Gonzalez next year in Los Angeles. That'll do it for the fantasy segment this week. Going to go to our postseason predictions. The brackets are set in the American League. It'll be the Orioles at the Rangers in the wild card round. The winner will take on the New York Yankees in the division series. In the other division series, it'll be the Oakland Athletics taking on the Detroit Tigers. In the National League, it'll be St. Louis at the Atlanta Braves. It'll be Kyle Loesch versus Chris Medlin in that battle in the early game on Friday at 5 o'clock. The winner takes on the Washington Nationals, who finish with the best record in Major League Baseball this season. In the other National League Division Series, it'll be the San Francisco Giants taking on the Cincinnati Reds. Will be Matt Cain versus Johnny Cueto, a juicy matchup there in Game 1. Lower seeds this season will host the first two games of the Division Series. The higher seed will host games 3, 4, and 5. So we'll start it off with the American League. Guys, what is your predictions? We're going to go through. Just tell me who wins the wild card round, division series, and goes to the World Series in the American League for you. We'll start it off with the American League guys and Brian.
Well, I have to go with the Rangers are going to win the wild card. And they're going to beat the Yankees, just because I feel like they can beat the Yankees. I think Oakland goes in and beats Detroit. I think Oakland is the World Series representative of the American League.
Interesting. You think Oakland will stay on a roll and take out the Rangers in the ALCS? Angelo, your rebuttal to Brian knocking out your Tigers in the first round.
Well, previous history stats show that the teams that go into the playoffs on a winning streak, especially one as large as the Oakland A's is, will not succeed. So I do have the Rangers beating the Orioles. I have the Yankees beating the Rangers, probably in 5 games. I've got the Tigers beating the A's, and I like our pitching matchup. Our pitching's going to carry us through, so I'm going to take the Tigers over the Yankees. We tend to play well against the Yankees.
Are you worried at all? We forgot to talk about it in the injury segment. Are you worried at all about Max Scherzer's ankle injured in the AL Central clinching celebration?
I was shocked to read that when I found out, but no, I'm not worried. They had him scratched today to start, and then all of a sudden, they last minute decision, they plugged him back in to get some pitches in. So he was fine. He looked great tonight, and so I'm not worried at all.
KP, over to you. What is your American League predictions?
I don't know if I have it broken down by round or anything yet. I will. But I think it'd be hard right now. Oakland's riding that hot little wave. I mean, everything's going crazy in Oakland, I'll tell you that much. I also think Baltimore's been playing well, but not as well lately. I mean, Texas has been slumping too. So I'm excited to watch that game on Friday, Baltimore-Texas. It'll be interesting to see who can show up after watching Texas get dismantled this last week. The Yankees obviously always have a chance. I mean, it would be stupid to say that they didn't. But and Detroit also. I mean, behind Justin Verlander, Triple Crown.
All right. Jeremy, over to you. Your thoughts breaking down the AL playoff race.
All right. Well, it's definitely an intriguing playoffs this year. You know, I got to hand it to the extra wild card. It is making things a little wacky. And I'm going to actually go against my gut. I'm sorry, Brian. I think the Orioles are going to ride what they've got. I think they're going to pull it out somehow. They've been doing it all year. I think they're going to beat you guys and the Rangers in the one-game playoff. I do not think they will beat the Yankees. It's a whole different beast going into a, you know, best-of-five, pressure-packed October series that this Yankees team is completely used to. This Orioles team is brand new to. So I think they can win one game the way they've been doing it all year. I don't think they'll beat the Yankees in a series. As for A's Tigers, man, I'd love to see the A's go on. It's going to be a close, close series, and I just don't think that they can beat Justin Verlander, Miguel Cabrera, Prince Fielder, just all the big, powerful veteran players that the Tigers have. And I do think it will be, as boring as it sounds, the Yankees and the Tigers in the ALCS. From there, honestly, I like the Tigers' chances, Angelo. I really do. I think with Verlander starting at least two games in a seven-game series and the way that Cabrera's been hitting the last couple months of the season, I think they're gonna squeeze out a six- or seven-game series and represent the AL in the World Series this year.
Hey, a Tigers-Yankees ALCS would not be boring.
Boring by prediction standards.
Yeah, exactly. Boring by them always being good lately.
Understandable.
All right, my predictions. I think Texas is going to give up. I just think they're going to mail in this next wild card playoff game. I don't know why, but that's my feeling. I think Baltimore will take them out. And then that leaves Baltimore at New York. By the way, if you need tickets to Game 3 of the ALDS, I have two available at Yankee Stadium. So find me on Twitter at IamMapes if you want those tickets for a little more than face value. Got to make some money so I can try and get, hopefully, to D.C. when we get to the National League side. But that leaves me with Baltimore and New York, Oakland and Detroit. I said before the season that the World Series would be the Yankees against the Giants, so I'm going to stick with the Yankees here. Yankees over Baltimore, Detroit over Oakland. I don't think those rookies in that rotation are going to be ready for the big time as much as I would love to see the Athletics try and make another run here. I will have the Yankees getting their revenge on the Tigers from last season and advancing to the World Series. National League side, I will start it off. We'll go the reverse way. I said before I had Yankees Giants in the preseason, so we'll see if I stick with it. I have the Braves, my Braves, and Chris Medlin, ye of 23 straight starts won, beating the Cardinals, getting their revenge from last season's collapse debacle on the Cardinals. Kyle Loesch, you're in trouble. I know you have an ERA almost near 5 against the Braves in your career. You're going to get beat on Friday, and you're going to enjoy it. So that prints the Braves at Washington, San Francisco against Cincinnati. I will take the Braves upsetting the Nationals. I like how they played against the Nationals late in the season. I have the Giants over Cincinnati in the other National League Division Series. Just too much pitching there, I believe, for the Giants. And then I'm going to mix it up. Either way, I'll be happy. Well, I'll be much happier if Atlanta makes it to the World Series over the Giants, so I'm going to say my team gets there. It'll be a repeat of the 1996 and 1999 World Series, Braves versus Yankees, and I will have the Braves winning it all, baby, and then I will taunt you all on this podcast for a long, 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 long time. Gonna go back the other way. Jeremy, your National League playoff bracket.
Mapes, you picked the Braves. What?
Yeah, buddy.
Where does that come from? No, I'm just kidding.
We go into the ship.
It is. It's a similar situation for me. The AL and the NL, they both have 5 really, really good teams, really intriguing matchups, too. This is going to be one of the most exciting Octobers I think I've seen in a long time. Not that last year could possibly be topped. Sorry, Brian, but dang, we'll see. The play-in game is kind of awkward because my Cardinal fan girlfriend is in the room, and she's already staring at me with contempt. But I am going to pick your Braves to take them down on Friday.
Yes! Take that, Kelsey!
I just, Loesch has been great. I don't think he's going to be as good as Medlin. And, man, I don't know. I just got a feeling the Braves have it on Friday. And then Giants-Reds, I know you're going to say I'm biased, but I think the Reds' pitching is better than people have been giving it credit for, myself included. Until recently, I didn't realize how good they were. But like you've said multiple times on the podcast, Brian, they get to the sixth inning with their starter, and they have some good starting pitching this year. They get to the sixth inning, there isn't a team that can come back and, beat the Marshall, LeCure, Broxton, Aroldis Chapman combo. So that really shortens the game. It shortens the series. Kane actually didn't pitch that well against the Dodgers the other night. Vogelsong until tonight had been struggling. You never know with Tim Lincecum this year. You don't even know if he's going to start. So, I mean, the only constant for me right now that I'm sure is going to have a good start for the Giants is Bumgarner. So we'll see how that all plays out. They're both really good teams. That'll be a fun series to watch. And then you'll have Nats Braves. Sorry, Brian. I think the end of the road there for the Braves comes against the Nationals. Again, that starting pitching is just ferocious. And the Nats, even though they don't really, you know, they don't have any, like, MVP candidates on offense, they've found ways to win all season long. I think that's going to continue. I think they'll make it to the NLCS. And I think it will be the two best National League teams squaring off in the NLCS, Reds and Nats. From there, man, I think it's just, you know, the Reds have been there. Granted, it was a short stint. You know, they got knocked out by the Phillies real quick last time, but they have players that have been there before. They have Joey Votto, who's coming around. You know, he's going to be full strength finally. They have that potent offense that I would actually give a slight edge to over the Nats. And, yeah, same thing with the bullpen. I just think once it gets to the last few innings that they're locked down, I think it's going to be the Reds versus the Tigers in a World Series I never would have predicted at the beginning of the year.
All right. Angelo, over to you. Break down your National League bracket.
Oh, it's actually very, very similar to Jeremy's there. So good job, Jeremy. Except I think that I think all good things must come to an end with Medlin. I think that he does lose Friday to the Cardinals. The Cardinals just always find a way to win in October. I think they do it again, and they find a way to get into the NLDS. From there, though, they'll lose a tough battle to the Nationals. I think the Reds, with their pitching, also take care of the Giants. So you got Reds, Nationals, NLCS, and I think if it wasn't for Strasburg was still on the Nats pitching rotation, I think the Nats would go to the World Series. But without him, they falter, and the Reds and Tigers in the World Series.
You know, between this Trout thing, Angelo, and now you have the Cardinals beating the Braves, we're in a fight. That is, unless it's a Tigers-Braves World Series and I need to come to Detroit and need a place to crash.
See, it's funny how things change.
We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Brian, over to you. Break down your National League bracket for us.
I actually have Atlanta going and beating St. Louis for a wild card.
Good man. Redemption for you.
I don't know what I'm redeeming myself for. Oh, for picking Cabrera. Sorry about that. But I do not have getting past Washington. I just can't do it. I think Washington has too much pitching depth, even without Strasburg. Their lineup is phenomenal. Well, the lineup is good. And then I have Cincinnati actually topping San Francisco. Like Jeremy said, I just don't know how many of those pitchers I would actually trust, given their workload this season. And the back end of the Cincinnati's bullpen is best in baseball. And then I have Cincinnati actually pulling out and winning the pennant and facing Oakland in a World Series, and I have Cincinnati winning just because I don't want to see Oakland win.
All right, guys, you've got your champ World Series is set. Who is your World Series champion? We'll go to KP.
That's a tough pick, especially right now. I'm going to say I think Atlanta's got a good shot, and I think Cincinnati's got a good shot. I don't think it's going to be an AL team.
All right. Angelo, over to you. Who is your World Series champion?
Tigers over the Reds in six.
Brian, your World Series champion?
Cincinnati. I want to see Brandon Phillips win. I want to see what crazy stuff he'll do.
And, Jeremy, final thoughts. Who is your World Series champion?
You know, we kind of did all this on a whim, and now I'm wondering if I made the right choices. I don't know. There's so much pressure. Angelo, I'm your best friend. I think the Tigers are going to beat the Reds. Seven games.
Whatever, I'll take it.
Miggy can win the World Series MVP because Trout's winning regular season. Hey-o!
All right, I'll settle for that. I will settle for that.
And the last part of tonight's podcast, I alluded to it before, we gave you in the preseason our over-under totals and whether the team would go over their win total and under their win total. And now that the season is over, we can add it up, tell you who is the 3U, 3D, over-under champion for 2012. I will start it off, though. Our locks, where our consensus picks went 5-4. We lost on the White Sox under, the Angels under by half a game. All they had to do was win one of those last two games, and we would have hit the over. But instead, it's a loss. We lost the Marlins under. We all had the Marlins over 82.5. Excuse me. That was a terrible pick by us. We had the Cardinals under 87. They ended up at 88. Those are the four losses. But we did win five of them, which is plus money if you look at it that way. The Phillies under, Braves over, Mets under, which looked terrible at the beginning of the year, Reds over 87, and the Pittsburgh Pirates over 73. The consensus picks go 5-4. So if you bet them all, you made money, and that's what we're really trying to do here. But overall, the 30 teams, the breakdown, in fifth place at 12-18, including a blistering 2-12 on the American League and 0-4 on his own American League West, Brian Boynton. Congratulations on last place.
All right.
Thank you, everyone. I would like to thank the Academy for this one.
Top five performance right there.
Hey, I'll take it.
That's a funny team.
In fourth place at 14-16. Where I got screwed on a couple of these late. Me.
Hey.
Hey, yo.
Hey, all right.
All right.
Meddled.
In a tie for second place. Both at 16-14. If the first place person is unable to fulfill their duties, they will take over first place at 16-14. Jeremy and Angelo.
Oh, ayo.
All right. All right. We both won the Titans to win it. We tied for this. Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
And the winner at 17-13, mainly because he hit his Brewers hometown team over, KP.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Wait. Even that Brewers comeback actually did something for someone?
Yeah, I won an MVP for Ryan Braun.
Oh!
Actually, you all had Brewers over except for me. That was one of the ones that cost me. I had under there, and it was looking good for a while.
What was I, 16, 17?
17-13.
Wow.
Angelo, that's a heartbreaker, man. One game back.
One game back.
I know, man. It lost game 162, man. 162.
162. You know what's even more amazing about KP's 17-13? He was wrong on the entire AL Central. He went 0-5.
I'm not an AL guy. What was my NL record?
Your NL record was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-5.
Yeah.
You went 5-6 on the NL Central and just missed the Cardinals under, which was almost a push.
So I almost went 6-6 in my division?
Yes.
That's what I. That's what counts.
You are the bizarro Brian Boynton.
I play strong in my own division. What can I say?
That is true. That is going to do it for 3-up, 3-down for this week. KP, congratulations once again on winning the over-under game this
season.
Jock. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. It's at 3U3D. Read the blog, 3u3d.mlblogs.com. We will have a lot of stuff coming to you. Our full ballots for all the awards, our postseason predictions, great stuff coming throughout the playoffs as what looks to be an incredible October in the works. We'll have the full breakdown on our blog. Make sure you like us on Facebook. It is 3up3down, all words, no numbers over there. If you want to send us an email, it's 3u3d baseball@gmail.com. For my baseball roundtable associates, once again, the winner, Kurt Peter, Brian Boyne, Angelo Felicia, And last and least, Jeremy Dorn, I am merely your host, Brian Mapes. That'll do it for us. I'm sorry we ran out of time. We'll get to Eddie Mata the next time.
Light burn, we light burn, we light burn, we moving like burn. Well, it's the weekend, we moving like burn, we light burn.